The following program is rated PG. Please be advised that what you're about to hear may contain mature themes, mild uses of bad language, and some instances of violence which may be unsuitable for younger listeners. Parental guidance is suggested.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams become reality.
The Bad Ideas Podcast. Tonight's episode. That's our Annie.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the second episode of Bad Ideas, a movie discussion podcast. I'm your host, Lee, and tonight I'm joined by our other host,
Matthew.
And today, just like in the previous episode, we're going to be debating two movies in regards to which is better, or more precise, which did it better, which have a similar theme. In this case, it's Don Bluth Anastasia versus Good Times Anastasia. The theme being historical inaccuracy.
Yeah, as someone who's actually studied the historical background of this setting, neither film does a fantastic job, but I'm going to be defending the film that personally I believe did a better job of it.
Yeah, and his version that he's defending didn't have a stupid, insane budget.
Yeah, mine was clearly made by whatever they found down the back of the sofa.
I'm going to be defending the Don Bluth version.
And I will be defending Good Times movie.
AKA Golden Films.
Okay.
It could actually be a Golden Films version. You know, they're the same company. To make it easier for ourselves, they both try and cash in on what the big Disney movie is. Except here they're trying to cast on Fox's attempt at saying, haha, we're better than you, Disney.
Speaking of which, I would like to open the procedures because, well,
in case you're wondering why we chose this and not the, you know, quote-unquote podcast missing statement, which is terrible Disney sequel versus terrible bootleg, the Don Bluth Anastasia movie is on Disney Plus. I'm not too sure if it's prequel, Bartok the Magnificent is on there, but the Don Bluth Anastasia is on there for your viewing pleasure. And there is talk of Disney adapting into a live-action movie the Fox-approved Anastasia musical, which was an adaptation of this very movie. The only thing is, there's no Bartok in the stage version, nor is there any Rasputin.
Yes!
So, the live-action version is going to be interesting because that's something I will defend. The human characters are actually very well-written and are characters.
Yeah. Mummy always told me that when you're doing a debate, the first thing you should do is admit to everything that you can't defend yourself against, so I'm going to get straight out of the way. These characters are just piles of good intention I'm not going to say good, but just serviceable animation wrapped around them. The other thing I want to immediately sort of admit that, yeah, my film doesn't even slightly hold a candle to is the music. Allow me to gush for a second about how absolutely amazing the soundtrack for Don Bluth's Anastasia really is, because, there's a few really bland and forgettable ones. I mean, Rumor in St. Petersburg is... Yeah. And there's a few others in it that are kind of crappy. But, I mean, it did give us both In the Dark of the Night, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the best villain songs in modern animation, and of course, actually, one of my personal favorite musical songs of all time, "Once Upon a December," which is just—I mean, come on—you cannot beat that song. It's brilliant. And my film got two songs which I couldn't even remember long enough to write notes down about what the songs were actually called.
All I remember for one of them was Rasputin was singing it, and it was like "Freedom."
Actually,
drink,
you know what?
The wine of freedom, something, something.
Actually, you know what? I'll defend that one as well. You know what? I'll actually defend that. That was not a bad song.
I mean, you are meant to be defending that film.
Yeah,
so.
You know, allow me to actually get back on. I will defend. Rasputin's song wasn't actually all that bad. I didn't hate it as much as the others. Like,
there were
actually... I mean, as I said, let's just admit to the things I can't even slightly try to defend. And the first thing that I will say is that, no, the others were just... Sort of, it didn't feel like an actual musical. It felt like it felt like they brought the whole movie to a screaming halt in order to have a music video that has absolutely nothing to do with the story. They just wrapped the animation around this music video. But that being said, you know what, let's actually get on to the things that I can defend my film on. I'll actually say that my film actually has a considerably larger amount of historical accuracy in it. I mean, the Don Bluth Anastasia film makes the same mistake that I see a lot of these movies making, in that it goes that, the reason that the October Revolution happened in Russia was because of evil magics or because of somebody telling lies. And no, the Good Time films actually specifically does go into it and say that, no, there's a very good reason why everybody's halting a revolution here. This has nothing to do with magic, this has nothing to do with anybody shit-stirring, this is to do with however many long years of terrible, terrible reign from the Tsar. And it caused all of this.
Yeah. I was going to also say, both films also start with these happy musical numbers about how happy life is at the palace, and everyone's happy, and yours eventually touches on it, but mine just never touches on it, how everyone else is starving.
Oh yes, of course, the whole part where they go, oh, yes, your film starts off with the line, "We lived in a wonderland of elegant parties." Keenly missing the whole part where the masses were suffering under the mass famines caused by the First World War. And of course, the millions dying on the Eastern Front from mustard gas and all sorts of other German attacks. It was pretty bad to live in Russia at that time. Unless you were the Tsar or one of the nobles.
Well, according to Wikipedia, their defense is Anastasia is an alternate history film loosely based on the life of Anastasia.
Allow me to present my rebuttal.
Matthew, put your belt back on. Okay, you know what? Both films have Rasputin as a villain. Say something nice about your Rasputin.
My Rasputin was even slightly historically accurate. He was, I mean, he had some weird magical powers, and he did actually, it did go into the whole part where he did cure Alexei, who was the Romanov's son. He was the only son of Tsar Nicholas. Also, my version of Rasputin actually got a really damn good line in, which I did actually have to write down because it was just so, I was like, that's actually a lot better than that is a line that belongs in a much better film than this.
Probably my film.
Specifically says, where he says, "I can cure the child, but I cannot cure the festering sickness of this country." Which is, yeah, pretty accurate description of Russia at the time.
My version has Christopher Lloyd as Rasputin.
Yeah, but it has Christopher Lloyd doing nothing. He sits around, he's an idiot for the most part, he does really stupid things, and then he dies an idiot.
I mean, he did sell his soul to the devil. It was pretty evident in the film. Like, he gets his skin ripped off at one point.
And then he spends the entire... And you know what? Your Rasputin spends the entire film ruining the film. Because the film your film is a really good musical romance story between your two main characters. Except they specifically constantly sideline that actually good plot line to have more scenes with Bartok and Rasputin. And then you have a lackluster finale where he just dies and nobody cares. It feels like the final battle at the end of Princess and the Frog with Dr. Facilier. Only that was actually good.
I'm not watching Princess and the Frog, so... Are you basically saying what it feels like they looked at Anastasia's final battle and went, "We can do that, but better"?
Pretty much. I mean, they both end with the main princess throwing the villain's amulet on the floor and stamping on it, and then all his friends from the other side dragging him to hell.
Damn, that was my trump card. I don't know where to go with that. You just gotta kill my argument.
Also, your film did not include a graphic, an on-screen bloody execution of the Romanovs. Okay, granted, not bloody. We don't see blood. But we still do see them get led down into the basement, and they're all happy about it. They're like, "Oh, it's just going to be a nice little photo, then we're going to go for a ride in the carts that are out front." And then they're led down, and then all you hear is the gunshots.
I would like to point out, this is the second time me and Matt have watched this film together. The first time we recorded it, and I will include his reaction the first time to watching it for all of you. Because we honestly did not expect that movie to go that route.
Bang. That would be a fucking firing squad. So no! No, for a fact, that's wrong! Oh, fuck! I mean, it's a kid's film. I was expecting it to just be, like... I was honestly expecting them to just sort of cut off. I did not expect them to just just start blasting. Also, actually, that does sort of... that also trips into the realm of the historical accuracy. Because one of the things which they do include in the Good Time films is after the Romanovs are killed, you do see one of the guards specifically... lamenting the fact that he's just had to kill a king, and that's something that most of the people responsible for the death of the Tsar actually did say afterwards. A lot of them specifically said that they regretted their choices. Also, the only reason that they did it was because the Bolsheviks got all the executioners super drunk before they went in and did it. They were really drunk to make sure that they wouldn't chicken out. Or at least, so the stories say. Again, the only recordings we have of that incident was word of mouth of the guards. And it could just be somebody trying to get his own back.
You know what, I can't even remember a single song from the Don Bluth one. But, you know what, I do remember? I remember a great characterisation from our core three characters. Anastasia, Dimitri, Andrus and Kelsey Grammer.
Okay, you know, that's a low blow. You know for a fact Good Times doesn't do characters.
We had a actual fascinating character arc for Dimitri in the Don Bluth one. When we first see him, well, actually, when you very, very first see him, he's a little kid who helps Anastasia and her grandmother, and I'm assuming Sophie, like, getting them out of the building. I assume that was Sophie. I can't remember, unless it was one of the other sisters. But anywho, he helps get them out through... a secret passage, and for his thanks, he gets the shit kicked out of him. But then we see him, and the next time we see him, I got this great plan. It'll be the greatest con in history. Oh, okay, you're going that route. You're a con artist. You're our Han Solo of this film. You're in it for the money. But as the film goes on, he slowly starts to see the error of his ways. He falls in love with Anastasia. Even Russ and Kelsey Grammer, whose name I can't bloody remember in this
film.
Vladimir, thank you. Even Vladimir actually says at one point, oh, I should not have had them dance. I should not have had them dance.
Actually, I believe he sings that.
Actually, he doesn't know. He actually, it's after he's done singing, because he realised, what have I done? I made them dance. Oh, no. And then the icing on the cake, the absolutely amazing milkshake that you've waited ages to be made in front of your eyes, and it tastes so goddamn good, is the scene with the grandmother. Where she goes, here is your money for returning my granddaughter. He goes, I accept your thanks, your highness, but I cannot take the money. And she goes, why not? Change of heart. And he walks away, knowing they can't be together due to their class. That is amazing characterisation. And I will defend this film for that. And also... can you imagine how excited I was when I found out there was a musical that just focused on those three and had no Rasputin?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You're trying to defend the one that does have Rasputin in it, and he is dragging you down. He is the weight around your shoulders here. At the very least, you know what? In my film, for some reason they decided to roll Rasputin and Vladimir Lenin into one character. I don't know why they decided to do it. Also, they gave him a talking dog sidekick, which goes absolutely nowhere. But thankfully, my one doesn't talk so much, meaning that he's immediately better than Bartok.
Yeah, I don't know why they give Rasputin a Russian drunk Scooby-Doo. Though I now have this headcanon that Scooby-Doo's great-great-great-great-grandfather was part of the Russian Revolution now. Well, Shaggy, I'm looking up my family tree, and this is my great-great-great-uncle from Scrappy's side. Oh, George, who's that with him? Well, it's Rasputin.
And this is a picture of them riding a race out of Russia.
My George, is that the dead Tsar Scoob? I don't know. Dark Scooby-Doo is dark. Yeah, I won't lie. I look at Bartok as well. Because you had those three little birds, but only like one of them talked a lot. And it was that same annoying voice actor who voiced a really annoying angel from the Little Angels.
Yeah, for some reason they found the need to introduce a combination, all the worst parts of Bartok the Magnificent and Iago from Aladdin into it, and it's pretty bad. Let's just say that they find him in the middle of a Fabergé egg, and ultimately they should have just stamped on the fucker.
Yeah, I mean, someone looked at Bartok and thought, this bat character deserves his own movie. And I'm like, why? Why? Bartok is like the worst part of this movie.
But you know what my film had that yours didn't have?
What's that?
The bad guy won in my film.
Yeah.
And that is the historically accurate part in that, well, I mean, the whole part where they kept on calling him Rasputin despite the fact that he was essentially just Magic Lenin. And... yeah, Lenin won. But in your film, Rasputin was defeated and he was dragged down to hell and all that sort of thing. But nope, in my film, the last time we see him, he is literally in the middle of the Winter Palace Square, just having toppled the statue of the Tsar, and everybody is portraying him as the national liberator and hero. And again, I put this down to the fact that he's supposed to... He fills Lenin's role. Throughout the film, for some reason, he's talking with a guy in a yellow shirt, and it's not made entirely clear who that guy in the yellow shirt is. I think he's supposed to be German, because... Lenin's revolution was financed specifically by the Germans because they wanted to knock the Russians out by any means necessary.
Could it have been Lenin?
Who?
The guy in the yellow shirt.
No, because he was. It said that he was some kind of foreign guy.
Really?
So I'm going to assume that he was. Also, in that film, for some reason, you see them using the whole strategy board thing, and they're using contemporary tanks as models. Despite the fact that contemporary tanks didn't exist yet. That's a little bit weird. I mean, I suppose you got, like, the French... you've got the French FTs, but they... I mean, they weren't proper tanks. Yeah. They were kind of like mini tanks with a little machine gun on the top instead of a big cannon. But you had a proper, like... It looked like a Sherman. And that's from... that. I mean, sorry, wrong World War there.
You know what? I'll say this about my film. Mine was gorgeous to look at.
My film had animation.
Mine had really detailed backgrounds. I didn't literally copy and paste every single background character 3 to 4 times. To the point it looked like they were in a clone village.
Hey, I said that my film had animation. I never said it was good.
Mine had a train car catching fire... And this amazing, like, oh, will they get off in time? Will they won't get off in time? And a bridge exploding. And also hints that the train car driver's probably got burnt alive by Rasputin. But, you know, they don't touch on that.
Dimitri was an idiot in that scene. I do have to step in and say. You see him get off, you see him climb into the front of the train, looks at the fact that there are literally demons clawing their way out of the firebox, and his exact response is, something's not right.
It looked amazing, though.
Yeah, but he's an idiot. So, Satan himself is trying to claw his way out of this depraved fucking Thomas the Tank Engine bastardization. That's probably nothing. Oh, and look, Chernobog himself just showed up to break the bridge. Oh, well. Maybe I should say that he's got some balls on him. But more likely, he's just an idiot. I mean, he's a kitchen boy from Russia... Clearly, you know, he was a young boy in 1918. He was clearly not educated. So, yeah, I'm just going to go with the fact that he's an idiot.
You know who was educated, though? Vlad, who is best dad.
Vlad was a really great character. It's a shame that we learned absolutely sod all about him. So you can't even slightly...
We did. We learned that he knew the Tsar. You even pointed out he was a... He probably served in the army.
Probably being the word there. We didn't know anything about that. It's all speculation.
It's clear, though, he had a higher education because he was trying to teach Anastasia how to be a princess. So it's entirely possible he might have been a private tutor.
Again, calls for speculation. Judge.
We also knew he had a thing for Sophie that lasted for 10 plus years. And immediately upon seeing her again, he's like, Sophie, my love! And she's like, Vlad, you're alive!
Yeah, I mean, he's got a thick French waifu. What can I say about that? Granted, my film doesn't have thick French waifus, but, I mean, it's got Alexander, and who is my film's version of Dimitri, you know, the love interest for Anastasia. Him and her, they have a pretty adorable kid together.
Which, due to weird animation, looks like he's making out with his kid at one point.
Shut up, stop bringing up the terrible, terrible animation. Like, again, your film had about, I'm willing to bet, had about 20, you know what, I'm gonna go with about 200 times the budget my film had. Like, your film had at least 20 million, quid put into it.
Okay.
My film, I'd be surprised if they had 10,000.
You know what? Your film had Alexander in the role of Dimitri, aka the love interest, and your film also had his Uncle Boris in the role of Vlad. Mm. Wacky, wacky Uncle Boris. Hoo-hoo, where is my shoe skis? Oh, they're on my feet skis. Oh, I took like this for the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Okay, but at the same time, if you've ever seen a Good Times film, or whatever you want to call them, golden films, good times, whatever, you know that every single one of them has at least one horrifically racist caricature of some culture out there. Let's just be grateful that that's all they did.
Yes, because, spoilers, folks, we started watching another golden film / good times film a while ago, and...
But we were watching it in public and had to stop.
Yeah! What was acceptable in the Goon Show in the 50s isn't acceptable now. Let's put it that way. But I will say, you know, that was the true romance story in the Don Bluth Anastasia. Vlad and Sophie.
Yeah, but he didn't rescue her right after she got shot, did he?
She didn't get shot.
My Anastasia did.
Oh.
My point, she got shot along with the rest of her family, and I will not stop going on about that. They actually showed it, and I respect them for doing it.
Yeah, I was half expecting silhouettes of the Romanovs at some point. Like, maybe she's trying to get away. But no, in this film, because she didn't get on the train, she slipped. She banged her head and got amnesia.
I do want to say that, you know what? In your film, they give the lady that runs the orphanage a lot of shit. But you know what? That orphanage owning lady, I want to know more about her. She let Anastasia keep a solid gold necklace, which, you know, when Russia's going through a famine, that could have paid for a lot of food, but she let her keep it because of, you know, sentimental value. She gave her food, she gave her clothes, she even got her a job in the local village, and she gets treated like shit, and that is what Don Bluth does. That woman was a saint. And she was vilified for it. I know this is a needless hill to die on, but put my gravestone on it right now. I'm gonna # Anastasia orphanage lady did nothing wrong.
Well, at least in my film, she had a happy ending. I mean, technically, yours did, but she clearly was having a mental breakdown.
She did. My Anastasia did have a happy ending. She got amnesia, and then her husband kept every piece of information from her for the longest time, and then finally broke it to her when he took her to the place that meant something to her, specifically the place where all her family were horrifically murdered. And that is ballsy storytelling.
Yes, and then she has a mental breakdown.
Yeah, but it's ballsy storytelling, which your film did not have the guts to do.
Mine had a reuniting with her grandmother, realising it is her granddaughter because she remembers all this stuff no one else does, and they have their happy ending, but then she starts to run off Dimitri saying, I'll come back later.
You know, it's a very sweet ending, but my ending was ballsy. Again, your film chickened out. Your film went, oh, it was Rasputin's magic that made everybody hate the Tsar. My film said, no, everybody hated the Tsar because he was an idiot and he made them all starve, and then he took personal charge of the army when it was losing, and then made them lose even harder.
You know what? I will say this. The final 30 or so minutes of my film are some of the best drama, some of the best well-written dialogue I have ever seen from characterisation in the film.
You could say the last 20 minutes specifically, because 10 of those last minutes are the final battle with Rasputin, which is just terrible.
You cannot deny that even you've said it repeatedly in this recording, that if you took out Rasputin, took out Bardock, this would be an absolutely amazing film.
I do not deny that in the slightest. But the thing is, they are there, and you are defending the film that exists, not the film that you want to exist.
It will exist one day. Disney did greenlight it.
Alright, well, they greenlit a lot of things.
So, final thoughts.
My final thoughts is that as a adaptation about the story of the fall of the Tsars, my one works a lot better than yours one.
Well, both are horrifically inaccurate. We can both agree there.
Okay, if you cut out the birds, if you cut out the talking birds, then actually, for the most part, well, I mean, my film actually went through the effort of actually reasonably recreating in animated form Ipatiev House, which is where they were executed. Well, where they were held and then eventually executed at. My film had a lot of scenes which were historically accurate. Yes, Anastasia did go out and walk amongst the people. She was very, very well liked. She was like one of the only Romanovs that was actually liked by the people.
Mm.
This is portrayed in the film. She did go, there's a whole scene which shows that the Winter Palace is being used as a hospital, which is true, which did happen during the First World War.
Except it wasn't the Winter Palace.
Oh yeah, it wasn't, was it? Okay, but the point is that all your film had that was historically accurate was the fact that Nicholas loved his kids, which my film also had. But my film also dealt with the fact that Rasputin actually did some good for the Romanovs, because he did cure, well, I mean, historically speaking, Rasputin probably did not actually cure Alexei. Chances are what he did was he just went, I've shown up and I'm just going to say, oh, your son. I'm just going to give him the magic spell. Rubble dooble dingle dooble.
Itty wissy, let's get busy.
Yeah, and then he said, right, I'll take the money and I'll be back in a few months. And he'll be cured by then. And then as he was at the train station, somebody ran up to him and said, you've cured the Tsar's son. And he went, wait, I did. I mean, yes, of course I did. The Romanovs should give me more money. And also you should let me pray with your wife, but don't come in, trust me. No matter how hard you hear her screaming or what she's screaming, trust me, it's all good. But my film had historical accuracy on its side. Your film was a nice film, but utter hogwash.
When I meant historical inaccuracy, I meant how they both claim that Anastasia survived.
Well, to be fair, when both films were made, we didn't know that Anastasia hadn't survived. Anastasia's body wasn't discovered until, I want to go with 2018, somewhere around there. It was specifically discovered because when their graves were exhumed, two bodies were missing, specifically Alexei's and one of the girls, which it was assumed to be Anastasia because one of the guards had specifically stated that Anastasia may have survived. But yes, in 2007, it was Anastasia's body was discovered. Or at least they found two bodies in the Siberian wilderness, not too far from the house, where, yeah, they exhumed the skeletons and they found that, yes, they were Romanov skeletons, and that's when we found out. But until then, we didn't know that she hadn't survived, because there was no body. It was around the 1930s that they found a woman that they believed to be Anastasia in Czechoslovakia. She was a young woman that was getting ready to jump off a bridge.
Mm.
But she'd been suffering from amnesia when they got her down, and they took her back. Somebody pointed out that she looked quite a bit like her. She had a strange necklace with her, and yeah, she was taken in. She didn't know personally. It was something that was sort of thrust upon her.
Hmm.
And she went to the, as far as we know, she went to the grave believing that she might have been Anastasia. But yes, we found out late. And that's where the rumor that she survived kind of gained mass popularity.
Mm.
Was this one woman who they believed might have been Anastasia. But yeah, as we found out, it's definitely not her. No, she died. She was shot. They took her body and Alexei's out into the wilderness, dug a hole, threw the bodies in, probably doused them in with gasoline, set fire to them, hoping to destroy the remains specifically so that they couldn't be exhumed and used for propaganda purposes by the White Army that they were still fighting at the time. And, yeah, that's pretty much the end of that. Nope, Anastasia's dead. But, to be fair, when both films were made, we didn't know that for a fact.
Whereas now, we have the new Disney live-action Anastasia coming out. Let's see how they tackle that. Who knows, we might cover it on this very podcast. I mean, there's got to be another live-action Anastasia out there we can compare it to, involving the good Rasputin and time travel powers, and Anastasia travelling to the modern day.
You know what, I will accept any film that, for the love of God, does not portray Rasputin as somebody who is plotting to kill the Romanovs. For the last time, Rasputin was the one who was benefiting the most from the Romanovs being in power. He never tried to kill them. He never contemplated killing them. They were giving him all the money he ever wanted, and he was shagging his wife at the time. Why would he ever want to kill the Tsar? And that annoys me so much, so I am willing to accept a hero Rasputin.
Who knows? Maybe the Tsar is played by Superman actor Brandon Roth. You don't know, folks. No one knows. I mean, technically I do. There is a film like that. But that's not the point. So, yes, I guess I concede you won this one, Matthew.
I concede that my film was more historically accurate, but I do concede that yours was a better film, and I will watch your film before I watch my one again.
Despite that scene that had you cracking up and laughing.
I mean, I might keep that. I might just sort of crop that one out for personal use. You know, when I'm alone and I need a good giggle. Or Pornhub's down.
And with that, thank you for listening, folks. Hope you had a lovely evening. And remember, folks, Anastasia is dead. That has got to be one of the weirdest ways to end the podcast.
I don't care.
Featured in tonight's episode were Lee J. Sands and Matthew Sharp. This is your narrator, Victor Arbisi. Thank you for listening. Dos Bedonia.
This program is copyright 2023, all rights reserved, and is brought to you by Dream Realm Enterprises, always warping to new dimensions.